This time on Weather Brains. He's Canadian, he's controversial, and he minces no words about global warming.
With global warming, the consensus was reached before the research had even begun.
We talk with Dr. Tim Ball about the United Nations panel on climate change.
A few so-called climate scientists, and most of them are computer modelers, have taken that agency and, in my opinion, perverted it to their own agenda.
Also this time,
there is no doubt that the school administration did the right thing.
Heroes and angels. James Spann reflects on time spent in Enterprise, Alabama.
There are some amazing stories that will be told in coming weeks and months and years.
Plus,
what is that smell?
Well, we all took showers, so it can't be that. It must be those Bradford pear trees. And Kevin Selly has the answers. Plus, are telephone solicitors reaching new lows? We'll play a message that was left as a voicemail.
Why would anyone respond to that?
And we'll read some viewer mail. It's all coming up. Welcome to episode 60 of Weather Brains, the netcast that's all about weather, put together by the Weather Company. I'm David Black. With me this time, Kevin Selly, Dallas, Texas, and from Birmingham and Helena, Alabama, respectively, James Spann and Brian Peters. Hey, Kev, how you doing?
David, I'm a little frustrated, a little worried that last week I forgot to mention the listener survey. Did I do that?
I don't know if you did. Well, actually, okay, let's call it the way it is. Yes, you did more than once, and boy, have we gotten some tremendous answers from folks all across the country and just about the globe. Really exciting on that. Let me say hello right quick, though, to James and to Brian. James, what you know? Out of trouble?
I'm doing great, David. Lovely time of the year. The Bradford pears are blooming, as I heard Kevin mention last week.
Yeah,
allergies and pollen, you know?
Yeah, you couldn't be with us, but we did get into some discussion about Bradford pears, and we're going to have a follow-up discussion to that. I mentioned the word staying out of trouble, and that's kind of synonymous with Brian Peters. I don't know if I should even ask him or not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, should I even ask what you've been into, what kind of trouble you've been stirring up this time?
I haven't been in any trouble whatsoever. There are no policemen at my door. I'm not in handcuffs.
Okay.
Well, step up.
Yeah, just, let us know. Whoever's got to bail you out next time. I think it's Spann's turn on the next round. We get the late night phone call. James, you couldn't be with us last week, and you had a very, I suspect, sobering experience. You spent some time the previous week visiting the folks in Enterprise, Alabama, ravaged by the March 1st tornado. How was that?
Well, I try to stay away from tornado disaster areas for at least a month. You know, people need time to, you know, just kind of get their lives back in order and to let the emotion and the pain and the heartache of that kind of thing to fade away. The reason we went in so soon, I went in about 12, 13 days after the tornado, was because we have a primetime schedule or primetime program, an hour-long special that's scheduled at the end of March, and we wanted to go in there and shoot the special on the site and maybe find a few stories to tell. And that's the reason we went down there. And I have been doing this since the Civil War, and it really doesn't make it any easier to see that. I've seen dozens and dozens and dozens of horrible scenes like that over the years, and it doesn't make it any easier. And, of course, in that situation, you had the loss of 8 kids at the high school. And the town really is in mourning. And I did get a fairly good bit of time during the day to take a look at the damage. And I'll say this. There is no doubt in my mind that that was an EF4 on the Enhanced Fujita scale. And I wonder if a team from NOAA might go in and revise that. I noticed they did that on the Wilcox County tornado, which was a tornado from the same outbreak, initially rated an EF3. And again, from looking at the damage to very well-built frame homes, I just have to think that was a 4. But the town is wonderful. There's some wonderful people there. They're doing better, and there are some amazing stories that will be told in coming weeks and months and years. And I'm looking forward to hearing all of those stories, like Shannon Bridges. Shannon was a teacher, a botany teacher at Enterprise High School, and she was 6 months pregnant, and she jumped on top of a student there by the name of Hannah Jones and saved her life. And Mrs. Bridges is still in the hospital. She has 2 collapsed lungs, 6 broken ribs, lacerations all over her body. But her unborn child is fine, and she will be okay, but it's just a slow recovery process. But those are the kind of heroes and angel stories that make that special, and we'll hear more about those in coming weeks.
And you mentioned that this will be coming up on a special. That's on ABC 3340, the affiliate in Birmingham, Alabama. Let me ask you this, James. We have folks listening to us from outside the market. Is there a chance that you guys may put this on the web at some point later on?
Yes, we put all of our specials online after they run, and we'll do that, David, the day or two after that. It runs on Sunday night, March the 25th, so we'll try and have it posted on the website March the 26th or March the 27th. And if you go to abc3340.com and then weather and then video, you'll see all it. In fact, you can go through the there's just a whole pile of video there from previous primetime specials and severe weather events. So, yeah, we'll post it a couple of days after it runs.
Okay. Well, I know that had to be a very dramatic trip, and I suspect that even though that city is well outside your TV station's coverage area, I strongly suspect you nonetheless felt a connection of sorts to those people just because you're in the business of warning against danger like that.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, many people in the community told me that they are listeners of this program. And apparently the show we did the week after that disaster was widely circulated in the community. So the Internet has worldwide reach, and a lot of people know us from this show.
Don't you find that it's even important for the people who were not severely impacted or maybe even just close by, but they feel like they have stories to tell as well, don't they?
Yes, and again, I've seen this so many times. Usually for the first month, the media just needs to stay out, and that's why I hated going in so early. It's too early for a lot of people to talk, but after about 1 month, they all want to talk, and they all have a story to tell. And there will be some amazing stories of survival and heroes that we'll hear as people begin to talk, and that's what I really look forward to. We were in there a little early, but give it another 3 or 4 weeks, and we'll really start to hear some good stories coming out of there. And within the next 6 months to a year, I think I'm planning on doing a whole lot of stories down there. It's just it's amazing. But I will say this, and again, I know I've said this the week after it happened, there is no doubt that the school administration did the right thing. After looking at the homes that these kids would have gone home to, if they would have been dismissed, instead of 8 people dying at the school, you might have had 100 in the community that were killed, and many of those were high school students. So that all confirmed my original thought, was that the school system did the right thing, and they're to be commended for that.
We'll look forward to the future programming that you have on that, James. We talked about people that would be able to watch that from across the United States and the world, and that sort of ties in to our next item, which is really a follow-up from our previous Weather Brains netcast, when I don't know if any of you guys remember something about a listener survey. Does that ring a bell with you, Brian? Anybody like that? I don't know.
Yes. We've been getting lots of replies to the listener survey.
We've gotten some just tremendous responses from folks. Kevin, what does it tell you about folks listening to Weather Brains?
Well, I'm just really appreciative, David. I mean, we kind of joked around last week and reminding folks to do it, but the response was just tremendous, and I want to personally thank everybody who took the time to fill that thing out. The percentage versus what we, you know, see as far as listenership was just among the tops that you can expect with a survey like that. And so a personal thank you to everybody. I have tried to respond to everybody as well with an email, that at least just to say thank you. And I think I got most of those. There were one or two that didn't go through for one reason or another. Some emails got bounced back. And if you didn't hear from me, I apologize, but know that we really appreciate it. I did want to make a special comment to Steve, who's listening in England, because he commented that his wife falls asleep about 47 seconds into the show. He listens at night. And so I thought what we would do, and I told him that we would all speak a little louder and see if maybe we could keep her awake for maybe a minute or even 2 minutes on this episode. So again, thank you very, very much. And we're going to leave that thing up there for a while at weatherbrains.com. Oh, I should share a good kid joke as well that we got from a Mary in Vancouver, Washington, or the Washington area, and Washington State, and she got a nice kid joke from Reagan, who is 10 years old, and the joke is, when an angel gets mad, He takes a deep breath and counts to 10. And when he lets out his breath, somewhere there's a tornado.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ah.
That's pretty impressive.
Now we know. Forget all this research. We have the answer right here.
There you go, right there.
We know what causes it. I'm kind of a geography nut, and just something that was personally fascinating to me was to find out all the different places on the planet that people listen, not just in our immediate geographic area, but just folks in all corners of the country, and I don't know how far away some folks were. Maybe the one you talked about in England is it, Kevin? I'm not sure, but there's just a tremendous variety of people and countries, and we just appreciate hearing from everybody and know that every response has been read and appreciated.
Yes.
And it's good for us. It tells us what you want to hear, and we want to be responsive. And speaking of that, I hope that folks will always remember, listener survey aside, that we love to get email. If you want to leave a phone call on our free voicemail, that's fine, too. We'd love to hear from you. So very good experience.
Yeah, all that stuff's at weatherbrains.com, David.
Speaking of follow-up, something else we talked about on the previous netcast. James, you were not here for this, but maybe you heard the discussion afterward. The topic came up about Bradford pear trees. Kevin, I guess it started maybe with you mentioning that they were blooming and we were seeing the gorgeous colors of spring. And we brought up the question, do they have a foul odor? Because I had heard that, and you did some digging and found out some interesting bits of information.
I did. I was trying to paint this nice visual picture of the Bradford pears blooming in the spring, and everything was nice and pretty. And then David had to mention that they smelled like dog poop, and so we needed to we needed to follow up on that. And so it actually started on my end because my wife and one of her friends were walking in the neighborhood a couple of weeks ago, and they were walking around. We have a lot of Bradford pear trees in the neighborhood, and they said, "What is that smell?" And so we decided we would see if that in fact was the Bradford pear trees, because that's what another neighbor told them. So I went to Donnie Woodson from the Tarrant County Extension Agency. And if you don't know, Tarrant County is where Fort Worth, the city of Fort Worth, resides. And so I went to Donnie, and she was very kind enough to answer some questions and tell us, do these trees smell?
Well, you know, of course, odorous flowers have something to do with attracting the pollinator. Pollinators are attracted to flowers, or I should say flowers are pollinated by wind, or by insects, or even by animals in very few rare cases. But the insects are attracted to the flower either by odor or by a promise of pollen or by configuration of the flower even, because of the configuration of the flower might look like another insect.
Oh.
Well, let's look at the odor, since that's what the ladies were most interested in.
Yeah, the bees apparently don't care if it's a bad odor.
Well, unfortunately, or fortunately for the plant world, there is even worse-smelling plants than Bradford pears, actually. There is a type of plant called the Karen plant. Karen meaning like dead meat, and it smells awful, like rotting meat. And those are fly-pollinated plants.
Oh.
Most fruit trees, and therefore ornamental fruit trees, are pollinated by bees. And the bees are attracted to the flowers for two reasons. One is a promise of nectar, and one is a promise of pollen. Because you have to remember, bees use pollen in their hives to make the royal jelly to feed the queen bee. So they collect both nectar and pollen.
I've lived in this house for 8 years.
Yes.
And my wife didn't remember smelling it. Do we just not remember from year to year?
Well, but if you look back, sometimes the pear trees flower so early in the season because we warm up sometime. Oh, I've seen them bloom as early as February, late February even.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a late freeze, and the freeze comes in and knocks them out. This year for the Mexican plums, the pear trees, the both ornamental and fruiting pear trees, for the plum trees, the peach trees, the redbud trees, this is the prettiest season I've seen in a very, very, very long time. And I've got many calls about it because everyone's so surprised because we had such a horrible drought last year.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that horrible drought, we did lose a lot of native trees out in wooded areas because the drought is just going on and on and on. But think about it. We got a lot of rain this winter.
Yes.
And so the flowers didn't have a tendency to dry up as they do some winters. And then the other thing that happened is we didn't get any horrible, horrible freezes that would have frozen some of the blossoms on the trees. That's why you lose flowers in the wintertime, and they're not as beautiful as they are every single year as they are this year.
Got it. We're not crazy. It's not.
No.
It's not what was referred to as the smell of dog poop all over the neighborhood.
No.
Or the sewers backing up.
Right.
But it
right.
was the Bradford pear trees.
Exactly. And there's a few other things out there blooming right now that don't have that pleasant of a smell like we would prefer.
So there you have it. Bradford pear trees do smell bad. Now we know why, thanks to Dottie Woodson from the Tarrant County Extension Agency. And I'm really excited because this gives me an opportunity to announce my new program coming up soon called Stinky Flower Brains. So you guys go ahead and on that.
I'm just glad to hear that it wasn't a problem with Brian Peters not taking a shower again, you know?
Well, that makes two of us.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Okay, now things are degrading. J.B. Elliott joins us. Mr. Elliott, how are you, sir, and what do you think of stinky trees? Pretty but foul to smell.
Yeah, they're pretty, but I went out in the backyard today, earlier, and smelled both of my Bradford pears, and I could not detect any scent.
Well, that's odd. Okay. I haven't noticed it, but so many people have, so there's something to it, and now we know thanks to Kevin's investigative reporting. All right, well, speaking about a subject about which there is a lot of reporting these days, in all the debate over man-made catastrophic global warming, hey, is there any debate about that, guys? Y'all ever hear anything like that?
Hadn't heard anything.
No, not at all.
Not lately, anyway.
You've probably heard about these reports coming out from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which people call the IPCC for obvious reasons. The panel is set to release another report in April. Indications are strong that this next report will sound yet more alarm about what man's industrial activities may be doing to his own planet by causing atmospheric temperatures to continue to rise. The predictions are scary. By the year 2080, this is according to a draft of the report obtained by Associated Press, hundreds of millions of people could be starving because of man-made global warming. This, again, according to this draft of the report. Now, one climate scientist who has plenty to say about the panel's findings is Dr. Tim Ball. He obtained his doctorate in climatology from the University of London. He's a former climatology professor at the University of Winnipeg, and he's currently chairman of the Natural Resources Stewardship Project, and he's controversial. On February 5th, the Canada Free Press published a column in which Dr. Ball delivers a stinging rebuke to the global warming alarmist perspective, calling the connection between man, carbon dioxide, and hazardous global warming, quote, the greatest deception in the history of science. Dr. Ball says we are wasting time, energy, and trillions of dollars while creating unnecessary fear and consternation over an issue with no scientific justification. So how does Dr. Ball take issue with a group like the IPCC, given its size and scientific credentials? Well, that's one of the questions when I caught up with him in Victoria, British Columbia. How much credibility do you give conclusions of a UN-sanctioned group? I mean, after all, this had to be approved by more than 150 governments.
Well, of course, the IPCC has been and is from a purely political organization. And all you have to do is look at the procedural rules that they have. The technical or working group report is produced. It's set aside. And then the summary for policymakers is written almost exclusively by politicians, bureaucrats appointed by different countries, and then that summary for policymakers is sent back to the working group to make sure that the working group or the science report matches what the summary is saying. Now, this is like an executive of a company writing an executive summary and then telling the workers to write a report that confirms his executive summary. It is literally unbelievable. And, of course, you see the politics of the IPCC summary in the fact that China delegates went there and argued vigorously against the science of what was going on and the politics of what was going on. And then India, of course, simply registered their opposition by only sending one delegate. And so the IPCC thing, I happen to think, and I think there's very good evidence, that a few so-called climate scientists, and most of them are computer modelers, have taken that agency and, in my opinion, perverted it to their own agenda. And you see that. You see the same names that I've confronted throughout my whole career. And by the way, some of them, 30 years ago when I started out, when global cooling was the scientific consensus, and consensus isn't a scientific fact, but some of them were, oh, the world's going to end, cooling's going to be the end of the world and the humanity. Some of them are now onto this warming bandwagon. And the UN thing, as I said, is the vehicle that they're using to push their political agenda. And it's then enhanced because it fits the agenda of some of the extreme environmental groups. And so you've got this unholy alliance exploiting fear and lack of understanding.
And you've taken a lot of criticism online and some of the websites that I've looked at citing your arguments. You're a Canadian lightning rod.
Well, no question about it. And I mean, I understand, and I've got to tell you, first of all, if I was paid by the oil companies, which is not true, I wouldn't be driving a 1992 car and living in a leaky apartment block. And I knew that there's an old English saying that when you stand up in the coconut shy, they're going to throw at you. That's fair enough. And as they say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, that's simply not true. I mean, I've received death threats on email, and this is outrageous. And I said the chilling effect that that's had on very large segments of our society.
So what does it tell you when the attacks become personal, when there are threats and such?
My response to it is that, and they're called, by the way, ad hominem attacks, Latin for, you know, to the person or to the man. And it's well known in philosophical circles that once somebody starts that, they're diverting away from the issues. They don't want to discuss the issues. And so I see that as a sign that we're starting to make some headway. And the other side of it is I was introduced in Winnipeg recently by a friend who was going to give a talk, and he said, you know, I've known Tim for 30 years, and he's taken a lot of flack, but never heavier than he's getting right now. But I want to remind him that during the wartime, pilots always knew that if they were getting heavy flack, it was a sure sign they're over the target. And so, yeah, it's not nice. I don't look to myself as a lightning rod or a champion. I'd rather not have that. The concern of my family worries me. But as a scientist, I feel obliged to get the truth out there and to get all the truth out there and all the facts out there. Now, once that's on the table and the politicians make their decisions, that's part of the process too. But I don't want them to make decisions without all of the evidence. I don't want them to be able to come back and say, well, you know, I wasn't told. And I want them then to be accountable for the decisions they make because they have chosen one side or the other.
Does being a skeptic today, as you are labeled, does that mean that you're actually practicing good standards of science, in your opinion?
Absolutely. All scientists are skeptics and should be. The scientific method is laid out by Thomas Kuhn, and I mentioned in my article, is that a hypothesis is created based on assumptions, and then other scientists test and challenge that hypothesis. In fact, what they actually do is test and challenge the assumptions for the most part, and that's the normal scientific method. So you still have Einstein's theory of relativity. I mean, theory is slightly different from a hypothesis, but it's still a theory after 102 years. Why? Because there's a lot of scientific concern about the assumption that nothing can go faster than the speed of light. And so what's being denied here and what's being thwarted is the standard scientific method. And Richard Lindzen said it many years ago in a quote in Discovery magazine. He said, you know, with global warming, the consensus was reached before the research had even begun. And, of course, what's happening now is as the research comes out and increasingly and more powerfully shows that human CO2, and in fact CO2, is not the cause of the climate change, you've got people, and including too many scientists, defending the indefensible. Because what they've done is they are now proving the theory rather than disproving the theory, the falsibility concept that Karl Popper talks about. And so what they've been able to do is completely stand science on its head. My concern longer term is the credibility of science is in serious jeopardy. And what I'm afraid might happen is when the public find out that they've been misled on this issue, on the so-called holes in the ozone issue, on the Silent Spring, Rachel Carson, DDT issue, they'll throw the baby out with the bathwater. We'll get to a point where they'll say, we don't believe anything you tell us, when on real issues won't get dealt with. And that's a growing concern of mine.
I've heard a lot of other people say, follow the money. Do you go with that?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that I saw as a trend during my academic career, it first popped into my line of vision when the university came out and said that you have to obtain funding in order to be able to go on sabbatical. And, of course, what happened here in Canada especially was that universities started taking 35% off the top of any research funds that a faculty member got. And it gradually shifted from that into, it wasn't publish or perish, it was how much funding are you bringing in, becoming a criteria for tenure and promotion and so on. And of course the other side of that, David, is the argument that, I'm being funded by the oil and gas companies, and it's simply not true. That's the other side of the money issue that is played up, but only on one side. I've been doing research, and through our group NRSP, we're trying to find amounts of money that oil and coal and gas company or energy companies are giving to primary climate research. We haven't found any yet. There is a very small amount going to secondary research, that is, you know, what are the facts, what are they saying, interpret it so we can understand it. But when you compare that with the literally billions of government money that has been going out, and Canada, according to our own Auditor General, $6 billion since 1997, and what that's done, of course, is create a whole industry of people's careers and organizations dependent upon that funding. And of course the more money you can shake out of people's pockets tax-wise, the more chances you've got of maintaining what you're doing. So of course to overcome that is very difficult.
How do you rate the news media's coverage of global warming right now?
I think that the news media have generally shown their bias. Now that isn't true of the talk radio, which tends to be more of a skeptical, but partly because of their own political bias, and more right-wing. And the media, and by the way, it's also in the schools. I mean, climate change or global warming is taught in the social studies curriculum rather than in the science curriculum. And so you end up with teachers who themselves tend to have a political bias, teaching things they don't understand at all, and then you end up having discussions in ignorance. But the media bias, it's had a terrible effect upon it, partly because of its sensationalism sells newspapers, and it also plays on the fear of the chicken little, the sky is falling thing. But people are getting increasingly cynical about the media, and they're having less and less effect. And basically what I hear when I speak to groups is people saying, I had my suspicions, but I didn't know enough to know. And of course, once you get them looking at the other side, and I see that gradually the media are starting to realize that the much bigger story is the degree to which the whole society has been misled and, as I put in my article, deceived. And, of course, what will happen is the media will then stampede over to that other side, and the balance will be lost again in the other direction. But that's the way the media operate. They get the pendulum swinging from one extreme to the other. And contrary to their own wanting people to believe they're the fifth estate that bring light and reason to things, they're doing exactly the opposite.
That's Dr. Tim Ball, an environmental consultant and one of Canada's first PhDs in climatology. We have the websites he mentioned during the interview on our website, weatherbrains.com. One of those sites, the Natural Resources Stewardship Project, is dedicated to presenting third-party unbiased information on contemporary subjects, including climate change. And along those lines, we've gotten a number of emails from listeners over the past few weeks. We thought we would hit a couple of those and share those for your information. Andy Lomax, York, Pennsylvania, writes us, "One thing that has me disappointed is the Christian organizations who are jumping on board with this stuff. As a Christian, I believe that what happens here on this planet is God's will. If he wants the human race to perish because of the effects of global warming, there isn't a thing we can do about it. Likewise, if it is not his plan, then there is nothing we can do about that either. However, that does not absolve us of the responsibility to be good stewards of his creation." Austin, Texas, Chuck Monroe writes, "The scientific basis for the so-called evidence of global warming, phrased in plain English, would go a long way toward helping me understand what and who is truthful and what is rhetoric. Similarly, there are scientists abandoning the global warming bandwagon, and I would like to understand why they are doing so, particularly the 60-plus who wrote to the Prime Minister of Canada urging sober reflection on Kyoto and the reality of climate change." And email from Hal Brody, "I'm an engineer who's very leery of mass media's total support of the global warming argument. Unfortunately, I am new to this argument and was wondering if you could point me to resources for a more balanced and objective viewpoint on this matter. I saw the report that said that the scientific community was now absolutely sure that it is a man-made event. What is your response to their research?" Any thoughts, guys?
Wow.
There's a mouthful, huh?
Well, it's so hard to do in such a short amount of time. James has spoken out on this number of times. I'll pitch it to him.
I have not changed my opinion on this from day one. And understand, I read both sides of the issue. I have read material from those that are proponents of man-made global warming and those that are not. And I stand by my original blog I wrote that created the big fuss. When was that? It seemed like an eternity ago. But it's my opinion that the process is mostly natural. We need to research it, absolutely. We need to do what we can to reduce the emission of CO2 for better air quality. But it is my opinion that this concept of catastrophic man-made global warming is pure bogus. And I, again, don't know of anybody, and I'm sure there's somebody out there that is a television meteorologist that agrees with that concept of this catastrophic stuff. And there's a lot of people that believe on the way I believe that are coming out of the closet here. I noticed somebody challenged Gore to an international TV debate. Did y'all see that?
No, did not. I know he's going to be testifying before Congress later on in the week talking about it.
That really brings up an interesting point, though, that I was thinking about during that interview. It's amazing to me the willingness of people like Dr. Ball to sit down and have a discussion with you about it. And then people on the other side, we had the Heidi Cullen thing, and we've even approached Al Gore's office. And those people won't have a conversation with you unless it's in a highly controlled situation that they're in control of. And I find that really disturbing.
And let me say, in fairness to folks on the alarmist, if I were to use that label, perspective, we are attempting right now to set up some interviews with some folks, some representatives of that, and we'll keep our listeners posted as those efforts continue. But
it is amazing that Dr. Ball has received death threats by email.
Yeah. It is pretty amazing. And it comes through to me, too, that this is a sensitive issue, I guess, is one way to describe it for a lot of folks. And we've talked about this part of it before, not meaning to get too deep into global warming again, but I really strongly sense from some of the responses, and Kevin, you read these too, that we get from a lot of our listeners that they do not appreciate or approve of a lot of the news media's coverage of this. Not that they're trying to take a stand one way or the other, but they just don't like how the issue's covered. They resent the angles that are taken into it. That's the take that I get out of it.
Yeah, and the mainstream, there's a certain segment of the population that the mainstream media wants to draw, and that segment is always looking for a fight. They want professional wrestling, and they're looking for two people to argue, and there's a certain segment of the population that will be drawn to that. And in order to draw a crowd, which is pretty much what the mainstream media is anymore, that's what they go for. And it's really unfortunate, but I think there are a lot of people who, and I know there are, who listen to this show, mm-hmm. who just would really like some calm, rational discussion like you and Dr. Ball just had. So thanks for that, David.
Well, his column I looked at was very interesting in the Canada Free Press, and we'll put a link up that again on our website, weatherbrains.com, if you'd like to look at it. Anything else, guys?
Well done.
Thanks. I want to share something with you guys and just get your opinions on this. And, okay, let me start off by saying this is not something I made up. This is for real. I got another telephone solicitation on my phone a couple of days ago, and this is one of these recordings. You pick it up to answer the phone, and you're being talked at by a machine. I don't like that, and I typically hang up, but this is one that was left as a voicemail. Some of these folks that are trying to hawk their products and services now are taking the negative track, and I thought I'd just let you guys hear this and see what you think.
Hello, we're calling to let you know that your customers have given your business a low reputation score based upon the ratings they have left online. To see your score, go to .com and enter your business telephone number in the blue box. Again, that's .com.
How's that for positive reinforcement, guys? Any thoughts about that? I bleeped out the name of the company, but I'm telling you, that's an honest voicemail. I did not make that up. I really had that on my phone. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I wouldn't touch it with a 20-foot pole.
Okay. Kev, what do you think of that?
I think that is really scary. I mean, it just drips of negativity. Why would anyone respond to that?
What is he talking about? This show here or what? I mean,
no, that was for my business. So I guess that's a commentary on my business. But okay, I have a feeling I'm not the only one getting that message.
Yeah, I thought he was talking about the Weather Brains program there.
Well, he may have been trying to track down Peters. Come to think of it.
Oh yeah, right. Here we go.
Notice Brian's been awfully quiet on this show. I think he's. You know, one of his trips stealing Wi-Fi somewhere.
You want to defend yourself, Mr. Peters?
No, I was up at 3 a.m. and hawking the weather on ABC 3340 this morning so that our esteemed Jason Simpson could have the day off.
Let me ask you this. When you were up in the middle of the night, you weren't leaving messages on business voicemail phone lines anywhere, were you?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, just thought I'd check.
Let me get in a cheap plug here. This is the weekend for the annual Southeast Severe Storm Symposium at the on the campus of Mississippi State University. I think this is the seventh year, and if anybody is interested, lives in the Southeast United States, it's Friday and Saturday on the campus, and you can go to, just do a Google search for Southeast Severe Storm Symposium, and Brian Peters, David, is going to be presenting a paper this year.
Woo!
That's going to be exciting, and I speak at that every year, and J.B. Elliott will be there. So if anybody is interested in weather, and if you have access to the campus of Mississippi State and you can get there easily, come visit us Friday and Saturday. That'll be a lot of fun there.
I'm expecting full Weather Brains coverage from you guys.
Yeah.
You know, the most exciting thing about that conference is trying to figure out how many donuts J.B. will eat at those morning sessions. He sucks those things down with both hands, so I'll have a full report next week.
I was going to ask
about yourself, JP.
I'm going to just let myself go this year and eat every donut you bring me.
This could be good.
Fair enough. Be looking forward to it. Next time on Weather Brains, smart weather balloons. Kevin Selly will have that for us. Sounds interesting. I didn't know weather balloons could be smart, but apparently they can be. So they're not just full of hot air. Anyway, we hope you can join us for that. If you'd like to contact the Weather Geeks here at Weather Brains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. Maybe you want to just leave a phone call and we might even run your voice on the air. You never know. Call us toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., 1-888-247-8627. 1-888-247-8627. Some of the music provided during this netcast comes from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, online at music.podshow.com. For the Weather Brains crew, consisting of Kevin Selly, Brian Peters, J.B. Elliott, and James Spann, I'm David Black. We do thank you for listening and hope you can join us again for the next edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Adios. Enjoyed it, guys. What'd y'all think?
Great show.
Excellente.
Well done.
You guys enjoyed Dr. Ball?
He was great, man. It was a good interview.
I enjoyed it.
I'm going to send you guys each a bouquet of the dead meat plants, so look out for those, the ones that smell like dead meat.
Ooh, pinch me. All right. Yeah. Bye, y'all.
Maybe that's what they're putting in the dog food.
All right. We're out of here.
Bye.
Bye.